You listen to the Replatform podcast, sponsored by Patchworks and hosted by me, James Gennon-Paul-Rogers. Each week we bring you interviews with industry thought leaders, the C-suite of tech companies, retail leaders, and also me and Paul do our talking heads, which we are doing this week on a very exciting topic. In return, all we ask is to tell other people about the podcast, help get our name out there, get us more listeners. And if it's your first time listening, do give us a rating. It really helps with our visibility. So our topic this week is around Shopify editions winter 24. So big drop last week. Shopify editions, I think, has become something that creates a lot of buzz and excitement in the industry, because the one thing I will say that they do exceptionally well is they know how to land and market their product roadmap. And they do a really good job of amplifying and making it sound sometimes more exciting than it probably is, but also doing justice to the amount of work and the cadence of development that's going on right now in the Shopify ecosystem. So our aim today is to go through, we've gone through and obviously looked at editions and pulling out things that we think are of interest. And I think the, me and Paul talking about this before we start recording, I think our overall view is interesting now. They are gradually taking away things that used to be used as reasons why you might not, or reasons why Shopify couldn't do something. And they are starting to tackle some edge cases as well to hit into that enterprise space that they are aggressively going after. So this is a really interesting change. So some of the releases will not be of any relevance to, you know, most e-commerce retailers, but to some of the larger enterprise, actually they tick some of the operational frustrations that are important that other platforms historically have given you that configuration power to do. So that's a really interesting change, I think. So Paul, so what do you want to do, your overall take on it? Where, what are you seeing as well in terms of that overall landing?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I haven't actually watched the edition stuff, but like we said on the last podcast, I went to that event in New York where they kind of pre-released a lot of the information around it. And I think because a lot of the enterprise team and some of their kind of senior leadership team were at the event, I think the tone was probably slightly different. And as you just said, I think my view is that they are aggressively going after the enterprise. I think alongside, like, historically they've kind of had enterprise, mid-market, SMB, all, you know, similar levels of resource and aggression, whereas now to me it definitely feels like enterprise is a priority to them. And it felt like, as you say, I think they've basically got a data set together. It's like, here's all the reasons we've lost deals in you know, our definition of enterprise, so over 125 million GMV. Let's tick these off. So a lot of those are around finance. And I think we talked on the last episode around how they've shifted some of the fees to make it, to reduce friction around Shopify payments, but then also like completely enabled Adyen, like kind of full feature set. And then they're kind of moving towards opening all that stuff up. And then a lot of the functional bits we'll be talking about. Again, I think it's clear that either they're moving them, they're going to have less friction for a sales process for enterprise, or it's like, so with things like subscriptions, there's just an opportunity to make a lot more income.
Yeah, that is interesting. Yeah, it was really interesting to see that change in the position around the cost model as well. Okay, so let's get into some of the areas, because there's over 100 like individual feature releases. So we're not going to focus on all of them. Let's pick out capability areas and let's talk around what we think's interesting within each. So let's start with some of the operational side, because I think this is critical, because historically going into like larger or more complex technology businesses, the operational side was the real like hamstring issue with Shopify around how you could configure things like order management, etc. So what have you seen around the like the order management omnichannel piece in the latest?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of promise in this area. A lot of it's still on the roadmap in terms of like more advanced logic from an order routing perspective, all of that kind of stuff. But the biggest one for me by a country mile is being able to assign an inventory location to a market and that actually being an effective solution. So you've been able to do that for a little while, but there's been risk of overselling and it's not really been kind of a fully fledged solution, whereas now they've enabled that as a proper route. So that was one of the main three reasons you would use expansion stores. So the other two are the payouts piece and then business entities, but they've ticked that one off. So I think that's massive. Ship from store, I think, is great. You know, a lot of other platforms use that within demos, including Centra, Salesforce. So yeah, I think that as part of like an omni piece is important. And also even that client we were working with, like, I think seeing that is just like, it's a trust signal, for like the omni channel stuff, even if you're not doing it straight away. And then I think from there, I think, you know, they're generally adding a lot more flexibility around inventory, lots of stuff around POS, like smaller things, but you can definitely see that they're trying to make POS more enterprise ready. And I've definitely seen in terms of how they're selling POS, like they're trying to push it up. So yeah, I think that's an exciting area. I think I'll let you talk about your thoughts on that. But I think the biggest one for me is product, but order management is something they need to attack in order to get really in those enterprise deals.
Yeah, and I think interesting, that omnichannel bit for brands that maybe have a small store base, they're planning to expand or planning to launch where they don't have existing technology infrastructure like you, because most businesses with huge store chains will have their existing POS and it will not, they won't be using Shopify's. But those that don't have it, that ability to have a bit of a richer POS, mobile POS solution now for stores, for the retail staff, that then also has the data flows to enable those more advanced omnichannel things around not just ship to store, but ship from store. Yeah, I think that's interesting. And they keep improving that interface and adding some functionality to help store staff using the POS, Shopify's POS, for like pick, pack in store. So yeah, it's a smart play. It definitely doesn't do the high-end enterprise POS capabilities around, like, yeah, for example, like some jewelry brands who need to do real custom flows in there, like alterations and sizing, etc. But it's getting stronger. So let's talk about the let's part the customer data thing. We'll come back to it. Let's talk about the product catalog one, because you're right. So the key ones for me is if I look a few years back, one of the big annoyances was the limitations around product variants. So I had a few clients who I would have hundreds of variants on the specific SKUs, and it wasn't supported natively, and it was just a bit of a pain to get more complex products and parent-child models sorted. But they've upped their game now. Up to, I think the API they announced is up to 2,000 variants per product, which is big. That's a big change. And also around it, they're making some UI improvements for the front ends. I know they announced like color swatches, the grid, etc. So just helping brands that are more aesthetically driven with their product variants rather than technical products and structures. So that seems good. What were the things that impressed you then about the way the product catalog's going?
Yeah, so I guess they're just looking at it differently. Like, I think this has always been something that, so they released Metafields and they kind of, you know, made that first party citizen and then they kind of put it out there, and their view was always a bit like, I think people can now do what they want with it. Whereas now it feels like they're trying to polish it a lot more. So attribute sets is quite a big one, or essentially being able to pre-build sets of data or like fields based on, you know, category and things like that. So like you might have it by gender or product type, etc. So I think that's a big improvement. And, you know, the people that are, you know, going through these RFPs want to see that stuff, particularly if you're moving from the Salesforce or an Adobe, which are pretty strong in this area. Yeah, the variant limit is massive, to be honest. The brands that we've always worked with, we've got around it, it's not been a huge friction point. But if you're selling Shopify to a massive manufacturing company or a massive, you know, multi-category DIY company, something like that, like they just won't, like there's too many workarounds in those deals and they just won't trust Shopify as like a real solution. So I think that's a big one. I think the swatches piece I wasn't as bothered by. Like, I think that we've always been kind of fine with managing that ourselves within the theme and stuff. But again, I guess it's like another one where you don't have to say we can do it in the theme or it's a workaround. Yeah, but I think overall, like, yeah, the whole piece here, like you can see that they're just trying to position catalog as more of a end user friendly solution, because it has, I've always really liked, you know, tags and Metafields, and I actually think you can do some really cool stuff with it that you can't do with like more rigid like data models. But equally, I do think this is the way they probably need to go with who they're targeting now. So yeah, I think it's a good step in the right direction.
Yeah, I think that's a really key point actually, is that you, there were workarounds and you could achieve functionality, but for a lot of businesses, when suddenly there are 20 workarounds and there's extra costs and there's hassle, it conceptually can put people off. And I think this is where they've been smart, because they are going aggressive on enterprise, but they were also tapping off some of the more edge casey stuff that or key things that smaller businesses wanted and just want to be there. Don't want to have to get a developer to customize the theme. And I was working with a smaller client the other day, and they sell like sewing patterns, and there's a theme now that has within it the ability, because they have like docker PDFs for the sewing patterns that they update regularly, but they've got loads of customers who've got old versions of PDFs, and actually custom built into the theme specific for that market is the ability to auto update customers when a PDF changes, so that they will get the update and they won't be left with an old pattern. So there's all these little things that are specific to different types of customer that are taken care of, that just take that little bit of stress or anxiety away, which is really smart.
Patchworks, the world's most modern integration platform. We can connect any key e-commerce system from storefronts to marketplaces and ERPs to fulfillment solutions. This allows retailers and partners alike to simplify their tech stack integration and do away with point-to-point vendor-specific apps. We can automate and streamline the flow of data across your entire e-commerce business. Find out more at wearepatchworks.com.
So let's move on to content, because you made a comment to me that I hadn't picked up on around OS 2.0 being interesting. Can you talk me through that? Because you obviously know it in more detail than I am, what's happening there.
So this does slightly scare me, because I haven't heard anyone talking about it, but it was quite a big topic at the event I went to. But as far as I'm concerned, that event, or as far as I'm aware, that event was focused on pre-releasing what was coming out in editions. But I don't think this is a major change, and it's not like an architectural change like OS 1 to 2 was, that obviously required like a lot of front-end refactoring, but they are kind of introducing kind of more tooling around like visual editing within sections, and they refer to that as kind of OS 3.0. so I mean, I this doesn't surprise me at all. I think you know, and a lot of people know my views and kind of our views on where Shopify will end up as, like, you know, at least partially a no code solution or a low code solution. But the only thing I would say is, like, when you see something like that talked about in the same breath as, you know, essentially rebuilding their payments infrastructure to, you know, allow for enterprise or some of the other stuff in enterprise, I do feel like they're slightly different directions. But I think it's a really good thing. I think it's good for the end user. I think it's good for e-commerce, and it is kind of where it should be going. But it's just, you know, and particularly when you start thinking about the projects being delivered by enterprise SIs, it's a slightly different direction. But I do think overall it's like a really positive thing for Shopify users, and that's always been their default orientation. It's just with this new shift to enterprise, it's maybe slightly disjointed or interesting.
The bit on content that would be a game changer for me would be when they have proper advanced scheduling and publishing for content assets, because it's the one bit where you look at platforms like Salesforce that are much more expensive to operate, and it's slower to get stuff released on. But they have such a lot of great configuration. The one thing they did really well around their content slots is that ability to target different content to different user groups, to schedule it and have advanced scheduling and be able to set up multiple schedules in one go, which more, I guess, some content teams really, really rely on. That would be the bit for me when I get more of it, because I love sections everywhere. I think it's really good and it's a great visual editor, but that lack of publishing control is the one bit that's missing for enterprise.
Actually, some of that was covered. Sorry to interrupt. Some of that was covered briefly, but to be honest, I didn't take enough notes. But I do think all of that is heading in the right direction. And again, they're very aware of that. And I think the other thing, like, going back to some of the work they're doing around like the underlying architecture of the platform, like the primitive stuff they're like revisiting, I think this all ties back into like the segmentation stuff and, you know, comes back into like how content is considered as part of Shopify. But yeah, I don't think it'll be long before all of that is kind of in a very strong place personally.
Yeah, I hope so, because that will also, for some businesses, stop them needing to invest in a specialist CMS alongside Shopify to achieve what they want from a workflow management point of view. Let's go into search, because I'm intrigued by it. In the last couple of years, I've definitely would perceive Shopify's native search to have some advantage over a lot of other platforms' native search tools, which need a bit more configuration and aren't quite as good from a user interface point of view. But I was intrigued to see the announcements around them moving into NLP, natural language processing, and more semantic capabilities. What's your take on where that's going? Like how quickly are they getting to the point where they are going to be considered a really like truly smart, semantic driven search engine versus just a good solid platform search engine, but not comparable with the market leaders?
So I think what people want from search has changed recently. And I think as the market has shifted from the old days of, you know, the ways of operating within Magento and Salesforce and, you know, search being something that's kind of within your control, where it's one of the few areas you can bring in a specialist third party and you want complete control and you want absolute best in class. I would say a lot of the brands that we work with more recently have been saying we're willing to compromise on feature set. And even the results for like the really, you know, detailed longer tail queries in order to simplify and, you know, have one template that we're maintaining and, you know, manage everything within Shopify and reduce cost on third party, etc. But I would say the Shopify search has not been good at that. So every time we've had this come up, we've always, you know, showed implementations and the brand's like, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's worth spending $500, $1,000 a month on something that enhances to provide a better customer experience. But I think that would change because I also think if you look at the solutions that are currently available now, it's not the ones that have the best NLP and, you know, the best personalization and AI. It's the ones that are easiest to manage. So it's the ones that, you know, that have the ability to, for like global and local logic for management across 5 expansion stores. And it's the ones that have like the best integrated VM solution or the one that, you know, has good reporting across all of the suites that they're using, like stuff like that. And I think that as Shopify, I haven't seen the improvements. I can imagine they're just going to get better at matching products to queries. And I personally don't think that's enough to make a really decent sized, you know, fairly sophisticated brand user, because I think there's still not enough flexibility in the admin around the merchandising side, building around business logic, like handling certain complexities around different types of products. But I do think they're heading in the right direction. And I think that's the easy bit for them, because they did recently add like query level merchandising and stuff like that. They just need to make it stronger. So I reckon in the next year, there'll be a lot more brands willing to use the native search overall.
Yeah, it's a good point about what drives search selection, actually, because the level of tooling you need depends on the volume and the complexity of search query. And for some businesses, you can have less than like 20% of sessions with a search interaction. And then you find that actually it's one or two words, and therefore you don't need NLP. What you need is really smart business controls so that you can merchandise it and you can set business rules. And the other thing is around like seasonality and boosting and being able to decide what you're able to push and when. It is interesting. Right? In some use cases, search just needs to just be simple and easy to administer. Let's go on to the next one. So you made a call about customer data. They're open up customer data. Do you want to expand on that?
Yeah, so I think the big thing here is what we've, I think, both already touched on, which is like the segment, and that's going to become a bigger part of the platform. So similarly to how campaigns work in Salesforce or some of the features of Magento work, where you can essentially build different content for different groups of customers, etc. So the segments were introduced maybe 18 months ago, I think. But it was relatively basic, and it didn't really have a role. Whereas now they're building that into the theming, so you'll be able to have, adapt content, etc., for those segments. And then they're also allowing you to pass that data out of Shopify into third parties and via the APIs. So I think that will allow people to send like far more valuable data to a CDP or a CRM. So historically, I mean, you'd send order and customer data, whereas this segment data would include, segments based on browsing behavior, like a combination of purchase and, behavioral events, all of that kind of stuff. So I think this could be quite powerful. And if they, double down on this and make it really good, again, I think it's something that not many, if any, other platforms have. I think it's all going in the right direction. One thing that I think is quite interesting, like if we were to do an episode at some point around where Shopify is going, because I think that'd be interesting. When we were talking about order management, I was kind of thinking about some of the other ways they're addressing that with partnerships. But with the with this one, it does feel like eventually Shopify, want to be a real source of, a real kind of like key source of customer data, and actually a lot of what historically would sit outside of Shopify would sit within Shopify. And also it feels like their analytics, they are building something that could quite quickly become a competitor to Google Analytics. It will be interesting to see in 2 years' time where they sit from a marketing and customer perspective.
That would be a really interesting development, because so many people I know, myself included, really don't like GA4. It's not intuitive like Universal was. Yes, it's got deep capabilities with all of the granularity around the event tracking, but Christ, is it an arse if you're not a technical analytic person to get it set up properly and working and get all the data into the visual reports you want. For a platform, for a lot of SMEs, if it built out greater analytics and reporting and visualization capabilities, that would be a massive win.
See, I think it's nearly there. See, I reckon that the bottom 10% of Shopify don't use GA anymore. Maybe not 10%. Maybe that's a bit aggressive. But like the reports are there. The bits that aren't there are like the filtering, and like GA is like, I guess, documentation and like handling of bots and like some of that kind of stuff. But even like they've made some changes around how they're managing cookies recently, that's kind of more in line with how GA would advise. Like it feels like it's not that far off. So many people from our clients, like, can we now use Shopify instead of GA? And our response at the moment is no, probably not. And like, but speak to an analytics person. But it feels like the bottom 10% probably don't even know what GA is, like the newer, brands and users, and they're just using Shopify. And I think that percentage will go up.
Yeah, interesting. Let's move on to subscriptions, because, for a while in Shopify world, almost everyone was using third-party recharge it started off. Then more third-party apps came in, and their alternatives, Skio, for example. So people use a variety of third parties to achieve subscription capability. Now Shopify's launched its own native app. It enables subscriptions and set up subscription accounts, and it lets customers be able to manage their subscription direct from the account. Where do you see, how advanced is this getting? When do you see the point at which actually functionality is deep enough where people no longer need third party and they just use the basic capability?
Yeah, so I'm not a subscription expert, and I think, again, that could be a really interesting episode at some point. But from what I do see, I think one, it's taken Shopify, I'm surprised it's taken them so long to try and fully own this and get all of that payments revenue going through Shopify payments, or, essentially benefiting them from a net profit perspective. But I think they're in a better position now to actually deliver proper end-to-end subscriptions like experience. And for a long time, they kind of had APIs available, or they had like the billing side, but they didn't have the whole piece. So I think it feels like now they're, you know, ready to support standard journeys, and, you know, they've got the app for managing it, etc. They've got the documentation. But I still think, like, as far as I'm aware and I've been told, I still think there's like, you know, there'll be a lot of instances where it's maybe not quite as flexible as some of the other vendors. And I think there'll always be like people that use Shopify in a certain way where they might want to use something way more advanced for like advanced billing flows, like a charge B or, you know, whatever else. But I do think that this is heading in the right direction. And there's, you know, I think it's like really lovely, easy win for Shopify to bring in a lot more income. It's now just going to be a case of migrating people over, like supporting with like the migration of tokens and all of that kind of stuff. Yeah, putting the content out to like give people a real understanding of like kind of what you can achieve end to end, and maybe how it compares to some of the other partners. But yeah, overall, I think, yeah, good move in the right direction. It feels more usable for the average subscription brand.
Yeah, what I like is if I'm a business that isn't a subscription business, but I want to pilot a subscriptions offering at some point because I want to test whether that drives incremental revenue, better lifetime value, basket size, etc. The ability to do an MVP out of a platform without having to invest in a license on a third party and do that piece of work would be really beneficial. So it feels like there's more stuff that's getting into the platform that people can do. They might not have the same capabilities as like the market leaders, like a Skios or Degrees, whichever one you pick up. But ability to launch initiatives quickly is really appealing. Let's move on. So B2B, I know we were chatting before, I'd said that there was some useful B2B initiatives, but nothing like groundbreaking. But I think the thing that you pushed back on that you thought was of particular interest is that they've now got a B2B, like a proper B2B custom like base theme. So do you want to talk people through what the change has been there and why that's of interest?
I think it's important personally because I think for a number of reasons. So I think they're at a really early stage of B2B. I see it, we've discussed before, it's a very different market, different buyer, different buying cycle. Like, I think I was talking to people in LA as well, and I think a lot of people have built so much into their existing factor around B2B, like they might never want to move, and they don't know what the rest of the world looks like, and they're harder to reach. I think it's a far more complex landscape. But what I think, there's a lot of Shopify brands that are using a Jaw or a New Order alongside Shopify. And I think that'll be a target right now. And I think one thing those products are very good for is like very simple theme designed for wholesale and B2B. Whereas the way that it was working within Shopify was you could essentially adapt your existing theme, which has been entirely designed for B2C, and you just remove and add content and buying options. So I think them doing this and then gradually optimizing it will make people a lot more likely to, one, try it out, and two, migrate over from those solutions. And then I also think they'll be able to offer it out in the same way that those two and lots of other platforms can, where it's like, here's a solution that you can get up and running super quickly that's optimized for, you know, B2B buyers and the ways that people typically sell in that space. So yeah, I think it makes sense. And, you know, we've both seen Sentry's wholesale theme, for example, which is very strong. And I think they just needed something that's kind of ready to go that they can also show, and just makes it a bit more accessible.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I think definitely having a B2B specific theme is good. Having the standard capabilities ready to go, like the bulk ordering, and they're starting to add some improvements around discounting, like custom promotional discounts on specific B2B accounts, for example. So there's some areas where it's starting to get a bit sharper, but it still, for me, doesn't strike me as supporting the advanced models. But as you say, B2B is a complex area to tackle in platforms. It takes time. The other thing that linked to that that I thought was interesting, and again, coming back to my original point at the start about they're starting to tackle some of the edge cases that suit, you know, bigger, more complex businesses, is in the order management piece, orders of multiple shipments, you can now capture payments when each part of the order is being fulfilled. So rather than I take all payment upfront on order completion versus, or I take order on dispatch when everything's being dispatched, the fact that you can take interim payments based on consignment dispatch. Now that will, for some B2B businesses I work with, that would be of particular interest, where you need that level of granularity and control in your order management processes because of the size of the order and also the way that you want to manage it from an invoicing point of view and from how you're charging customers. So real edge case, because not many businesses would ever want to have that level of transactional management. I find that really interesting that they're starting to add these kind of like detailed use cases in around some of these core capabilities like B2B. The next bit that I thought was worth talking about is the web performance report and the dashboard. We spoke about this briefly before we started this podcast. That seems really smart as well, just helping e-commerce teams with more technical site performance reports rather than them having to go out and use, like, a, you know, whether they're going to Google page testing or web page test or whatever the other report it might be. What do you make of that? Do you think that's something from the businesses you work with, is that something that's going to be attractive to brands?
Yeah, definitely. I think this is one of the smart things Shopify have done over the last few years, is like they've made it harder to make a site slow, basically. And they've, you know, one, they've addressed all of the stuff they can at like application level. And then I think the benchmarks they introduced were like a good first start, but a lot, you always hear about people kind of gaming it. And they didn't really have the detail to drive action. Whereas now it's more detailed, it's based on like the core web vitals stuff, like it's based on real users. So I think it's more, it'll be more interesting to the average user, more relevant to like the bigger brands, more likely to like drive change around, you know, images or third parties. And yeah, I think they're just, a bit more effective than just the kind of base benchmarking.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, the more you can get in a standardized set of dashboards without having to go out to other tools to get the information, the better, because it just simplifies and speeds things up. And then let's go to the last point we've got, because I know there are lots of different areas, but the last big one to pull out around returns, because RMA can be a right pain in the ass, depending on how returns are processed, how data flows are managed to get returns information back into the platforms. And you flagged to me about some of the stuff announced around returns and exchanges is useful. Do you want to kind of elaborate on that as well? What's happened? What's changed?
Yeah. So I think it's more allowing the stuff within the admin and API. So I think there's some new things around return statuses across online and PAS. And then the exchanges piece. To be perfectly honest, my only one comment with this would be, everyone talks about exchanges, all the returns vendors sell in exchanges, but all the complexities in the back office, because if you're taking an order and then giving someone the opportunity to exchange it in a week's time, everything, you know, has to be managed within the system of record for inventory and orders. And then it's more just how that then interfaces with Shopify. So I think I've not seen many brands get this right personally, but at least like within Shopify, they've made it easier to like edit existing orders and things like that. But I need to play around with it a bit more to understand exactly how it'll work and maybe if it can reduce any pain on the back office piece. But again, like all of that stuff's just so bespoke to the ERP you're using and how you're approaching, orders. So I think that would probably be like a kind of early move into like a base solution for this stuff. But I don't think they're at a point yet where they're like trying to kind of go for people like me for whoever else within the return ecosystem.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that is our kind of rundown of the latest Shopify additions. Be interested for anyone listening, What stood out to you? Like, what got you most excited, and why? And for agencies and consultants, what do you think is going to land best with the type of businesses you work with, that's going to make easier for people to buy into the value of Shopify? And equally, what else? Where do you think they're really like, where you want to see more traction in the next few releases? Do you drop a slide? We love talking about this kind of stuff. It's always interesting to look at roadmaps and vendor focus. Do reach out to us on LinkedIn. But thanks for listening. We hope it's been useful. Keep an ear out for our next episode. We drop one every week. And don't forget to give us that rating before you go. Until next week, everyone. For more information on this topic, head over to replatform.fm for our audio podcasts. To discuss a project, or if you'd like to chat about any of the topics covered in this episode in more detail, please reach out to myself, James Gerd, or my co-host, Paul Rogers, via LinkedIn and Twitter. Thanks again for listening, and keep your ears peeled for the next episode.